the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm Len. I'll be manning this flight, but not solo. I have somebody that's going to be joining me. We have Mark from the Coin Shack that's going to be joining us in just a moment to talk about a little bit about Coin Shack, but also a lot to do with working with Bitcoin. This is a topic that I think a lot of people are interested in, and we'll dive deep into this and learn a little bit more about this. But before we go any further, it's best if we talk about our two sponsors. Don't want to forget this. And number one, we are sponsored by EasyDNS. We've been talking about them for many months now. And well, a lot of different reasons why, because DNS services, it's in the name, EasyDNS. So you understand that they have that covered. Emailing, hosting services, they got that too. So no more at Gmail domains for your email addresses. You could be a professional or appear like a professional with your own email address tied to your own domain name. You could build your website with the assistance of EasyDNS. And this is the company that we used at the Canadian Bitcoiners to build our very own website, thecanadianbitcoiners.com. Don't want to pump that. Want to pump more EasyDNS at this moment. But they've been around since 1998. Their services, similar services have come and gone, but EasyDNS, it remains. Why? Because it's all due to the services that they provide, which they are a trusted name in this field. Plus, they accept Bitcoin. They're fast, reliable, privacy-focused. Check them out if you want to have a website built up and or if you want to have your services migrated over to DNS. You could have it done today. But the second one, we have a second sponsor, which is Bull Bitcoin. And you could buy and sell your Bitcoin with them. You could pay your bills. Your everyday bills, hydro, gas, whatever the heck you have. And you could use Bull Bitcoin to pay those bills, but you could pay it with your Bitcoin. So that's pretty darn good. You could buy gift cards with the Bitcoin as well. So you could live the dream of Satoshi and you could do things under a Bitcoin standard. You could buy on-chain Bitcoin. If you want to do something different, you could get Lightning or even Liquid if that thing is your jam. And those are also good options when the fees for on-chain are sky high. So definitely check it out. Finally, they have the KYC free buys. It's the cheapest in the game, the lowest spread, quick, easy, painless. All you have to do is just go to one of the over 6,000 locations throughout Canada to exchange your dirty fiat in exchange for, well, KYC free Bitcoin. I love the fact that you're using Canada Post to do it. So don't be a no-coiner. Check them out. Open an account. Use our referral code below. And by doing that, you'll get $20 added to your account. Sorry, $21 out of your account after you fund it. But with all that being said, I think it's time we bring on the man of the hour, and it's Mark from the Coin Shack. Mark, buddy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Now, it's been a while since you last been on our show, and every time I see you, I just wanted to make note that you seem to be losing a few pounds every time. So good for you. your body percentage, fat percentage goes down and down. So good for you. You're doing a wonderful thing. I know you said you're working out in your basement. At least last time I talked to you, I think you mentioned that. So yeah, it's showing off, and I just want to give you kudos to that. But there's been a slight change. Have you been promoted to CEO of the Coin Shack, or am I incorrect in that?
It's a very free-flowing structure behind the scenes. So kind of whatever role that needs to be taken is the one that I take on. And in the moment, the role of CEO needs to be taken on.
Well, that's very good. So you're like a glass of water.
I wear many, many hats. All the hats are on my head at all times.
You got to be dynamic in that position, I guess. And that you are. You're a dynamic individual. But before we go any further, I want to talk about the Coin Shack, because this is a place where people could buy and sell Bitcoin as well. And talk a little bit about that, because just for people who are unaware, where is it located? What services you guys offer? Pump away the product, because I want people to be more aware of the Coin Shack.
Sure. So we are a physical-based Bitcoin exchange and an online-based Bitcoin exchange, which means that we basically operate similar like a bank. You can come into our branch. It's located in Markham. You can sign up for our services in person, then use them online, or you can come in, sign up, and use them in person. If you're using them in person, it means you're paying with cash. If you're using it online, it means you're paying with e-transfer. The beautiful thing about coming in person is that anything...
Oh, there's a bit of feedback, by the way, Mark. Sorry.
Oh, let me turn down. The beautiful thing about coming in person and paying in cash is that anything under $1,000 does not require ID, any form of ID at all. You come in, slap some cash on the table, we'll scan your QR code, we'll send you the Bitcoin. It's very, very simple.
And recently you've been offering some physical devices that you could get. So if people are interested in that, some of the products that you could physically offer Bitcoiners, what are they?
Yeah, so we always get asked, people like privacy-focused people, they don't want to give away their address or use their credit card or even spend their Bitcoin online necessarily. So we've decided to start selling cold cards and HODL official jerseys and some books and stuff like that from our store directly. So you can come in with some cash, buy it, get it directly in your hands right away. If you buy a cold card, we can even help you set it up in store, and then you can immediately buy some sats and throw it on there. Yeah, it's very, very flexible.
Bring your cash and they will provide you with the stash.
Something else we sell too, I should mention, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I wish I actually had one around me now, but I don't. But we're selling Zimbabwe bills. So they're all real. They're completely real bills from the real country of Zimbabwe that had crazy hyperinflation.
Yes.
So we have everything from the $100 trillion bill for $200 all the way down to $1 million bill for like 10 bucks.
So you could be a trillionaire for just a few bucks. So
exactly.
Yeah, there you go. So there are options out there if you want to boost your Zimbabwe stash.
Just the Zimbabwe things are great to show your friends and show them, like, look, this is what's going to happen to the Canadian dollar one day.
It certainly will. That's the way things are progressing, sadly, but we see the writing on the wall. And lastly, the location, because you used to be in Toronto, but it seems like now you've moved to Markham. So where are you located in case anybody wants to go and physically attend your store, physically appear in your store?
Yeah, we are located at 238 Copper Creek in Markham, Copper Creek Drive, and you can find our website at thecoinchat.ca.
Perfect. And is that your cat or something?
There's a cat behind my screen. So.
Yeah, because
if my hand goes off the screen, it's just because I'm pushing him away.
It's impacting the mic. I can actually hear some feedback every so often when he or she rubs against the mic.
If it gets too annoying, I can kick him out.
No, I like cats. But anyways, I think that the reason why you wanted to come on the show, aside from pumping the CoinShack product, so check it out if you are in the Markham area, or if you have any questions to do with Bitcoin and stuff like that, like to purchase Bitcoin in person, you can also reach out to Mark or the CoinShack staff as well. But you went, and I went, and a whole bunch of other people went to the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, and it was well attended, great event. It was a lot of fun. But I think over there were some questions to do with, getting started in Bitcoin, working with Bitcoin. So let's dive deep in this topic. So let's go to the genesis of all this. What spurred you to want to come on our show to talk about Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I'm always getting people asking me, first of all, if I can hire them, because people are just, when they get into Bitcoin, they want to what they consider to be working with Bitcoin. But when most people think of working with Bitcoin, they think of working for a Bitcoin company. And I think that's the bad way to look at it. Not bad, but I think there's better ways to look at it. And so people are always asking me, how do I work with Bitcoin? How do I work with Bitcoin? How do I work with Bitcoin? So I kind of wanted to come on and talk about how I got started with Bitcoin and then like my perspective of what it means to actually work with Bitcoin.
Okay, well, let's start about how you started with Bitcoin. Let's go to the very beginning.
So I found Bitcoin in 2013 on Reddit because I was a big Reddit user, big social media user. And I came across it. I read the white paper. At the time I found it, I had just dropped out of college. I was living in a cockroach-filled apartment and I was teaching swimming. So I had absolutely nothing to do with computers, nothing to do with programming, nothing to do with technology. I was in a pool teaching swimming. What I would do, and then, so I found Bitcoin, I bought some Bitcoin. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is going to change the world. I immediately kind of got it once I read the white paper because I was a big libertarian. And I went on Local Bitcoins, which is a site that no longer exists, sadly. But it was a site where you could go on and meet people in your local area to buy and sell in person or with e-transfer or whatever people wanted to put up as an offer. And I went on there, bought some Bitcoin. And then my roommate was like, hey, look, these guys are selling it for more than what these guys are selling it as. So why don't you just buy down here and then sell it like these guys are doing? And so I started doing that. And I started doing that in a very risky way because what I would do is I was the one paying rent for everyone. So I would collect all their rent money, my two roommates' rent money, and instead of paying rent, I would go buy Bitcoin. And then I'd flip it as much as possible, and I'd pay rent like a week late. And I did this for like a few months probably like 5 to 6 months, paying rent late consistently until I could earn enough money where I didn't have to do that anymore. And I could then start to use my own money to do it.
So you found an arbitrage situation where you found it for cheaper, but you were able to sell it for a higher price. Now, this was in 2013 that you mentioned. I assume you carried that for the duration of 2013 and maybe even 2014?
Yeah, I did that pretty much for like 4 or 5 years, but through various ways. So I started off doing e-transfers, and then I got a business account at a bank, and then the bank shut all that down. And then I was hit with fraudulent e-transfers as well. So then my personal bank got shut down. So eventually I just switched completely to cash, and I learned the beauty of cash and how it can't get reversed. And it's like you're meeting people face to face. You're getting a good feel for them. So I did that full time, actually, for many years. Well, not many, but a good amount of years. And then over time, Bitcoin started to grow and get more popular. And as things grow and get more popular, as I'm sure you're familiar with the space, bad actors like to come in and try and take advantage of things in the space, whether it's NFTs, ICOs, or in my case, it was like my personal safety because I'm meeting people physically for cash.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to this because this I find to be fascinating. And I want to just go back in time. And when you were making these moves back in 2013 and beyond, when you're actually meeting with people in person, exchanging cash for Bitcoin. Now, the model we have is verify, don't trust. And you have to have some trust, I suppose, when you're dealing with people like that. How did you end up vetting people to make sure that they're good actors? And after you made the exchange, did you verify immediately that the Bitcoin was sent over? Or how was the process done? Because this was a very long time ago, and I'm curious to know what the mechanisms were, what the functionalities were that were in place for you to do anything along these lines.
Thankfully for the Bitcoin side of things, that was very easy to verify because you just go on any block explorer and you type in the address and you make sure it's there. If it's not there, then you keep sitting and you keep waiting, and neither party leaves. In terms of vetting people, it was basically like you start small, you listen very closely to the words they say. This is a sign for any scam really, but if anyone's pressuring you to do something, like if someone's like, oh, I have like $50,000 and I want to buy right now. Can you meet? I need it right now. It's like, whoa, buddy, you're going to meet a stranger online for $50,000. Like you should be just as sketched out as I am by doing this. You should feel nervous. And if they don't feel nervous, then it's like a big red flag in my opinion.
Agreed. And just to confirm, you don't condone this behavior today. The best way to buy Bitcoin is go to a reputable company and exchange your dirty fiat and get Bitcoin in that respect. Is that
what you exactly? Yeah. So over time, as the space got a little more unsafe and bad actors came in, and I knew people who were robbed doing this, me and a couple friends who met on local Bitcoins decided to start a store so that way we could have a nice secure environment to do everything in. And over time, regulations came, and with regulations, you risk meeting like a government agent, for example, and then selling him Bitcoin that you shouldn't sell him and then getting in trouble that way. So we wanted to kind of change with the times, as sad as that is, because it meant regulations, but it also meant a safer environment. So now we have a nice store. It's very clean. We have cameras. We have a double door entry system with buzzers. No one's getting it.
All right. Let's talk about getting started in Bitcoin, because this is a lot of buzz and a lot of people looking at this. And normies are looking at this and saying this, there may be some opportunity here to increase their wealth in one way, shape, or another. So with respect to getting started in Bitcoin, it's a very generalized, very broad question, I'm guessing, but what would you suggest for people is the best approach for, say, an individual or maybe even a business?
Yeah, so good question. So when I was getting into Bitcoin, I was a teacher, so I liked talking to people. I liked explaining things to people, and I liked helping people solve their problems or getting over fears of stuff. That doesn't really apply too much to Bitcoin. So I basically took that same skill set that I had developed in teaching swimming, and I applied it to Bitcoin. So when I met someone, I made sure I answered all their questions as honestly as I possibly could. I made sure I was the most honest businessman ever, so I could build up a good reputation for myself. Never trying to rip anyone off or trying to squeeze the extra dime out of someone. And that's kind of where my skill set was in. When we started the store, we actually started, so all three partners that started the store are not programmers at all. So when we started the store, we literally had a cell phone and a spreadsheet, and we would do it all manually. So we would look at a price on a website, we'd type it in on a spreadsheet, we'd do some math quickly to figure out how much we owe you. And then we'd pull out a cell phone and we'd scan your QR code and we'd send you Bitcoin. It was like not automated at all. And then over time, as we grew, we eventually convinced the developer to come and join us. And then he built our whole online platform. And now everything's all nicely automated. But we started a Bitcoin exchange with no programmers and no programming experience. That's the important thing to take away.
So essentially anybody could step in at this particular moment and come out to be a success as long as they have their head on straight, they're able to vet scams or bad actors, and they have a plan, they have an idea, and they just have to somehow see it through. And it seems like this is a possibility. We're still at the very beginning stages with Bitcoin, so there's lots of opportunities to incorporate it in people's businesses or even in people's lives. So, I mean, let's talk about a business, because that's one thing that I think this might have a real game changer with respect to the price of Bitcoin. When businesses get on board and start using Bitcoin more and more, there are some challenges to go along with that, aren't there? Because in Canada, you have to report every buy and sell, and that could be a nuisance. That could be a real headache. But unfortunately, it's a requirement. So perhaps you could give some advice for any businesses out there that want to start transacting in Bitcoin in Canada. What would you suggest people do?
First of all, if you're an accountant and you're into Bitcoin, that's a huge like gap in the industry. So again, use your skill set and your knowledge to step in and offer businesses being like, bro, I'll help you out with that Bitcoin stuff. Don't charge them or charge them very little for your time. That way they know you're genuine and you actually are helping them to grow Bitcoin. Otherwise, what was the question again? Sorry.
Well, it's just having businesses start using Bitcoin and start transacting with it and adhering to all the rules and regulations.
Honestly, it's kind of maybe not the best answer, but at the very beginning, don't care about that stuff. Only care about that stuff when you're actually building momentum. So like if you're going to start accepting Bitcoin at your store, for example, and your store is a fiat-based store, like you say you sell teddy bears or something, just start advertising Bitcoin. Don't worry about the bookkeeping. Don't worry about any of that stuff. When someone actually comes to you to buy something with Bitcoin, do it. And then afterwards, figure out all that stuff.
So in terms of having a mechanism in place to allow these services or goods to be sold in Bitcoin, it's, I guess, BTC pay server. It immediately comes to mind for me. Mm-hmm. And that's something that works. But there's also some commercial options out there. I know Liquid Fintech, they changed their company name recently. I forget what it is now. But there are some commercial opportunities or software products that are available to vendors out there as well. Maybe you could provide some guidance of what people should use in terms of a medium in exchange somewhere between fiat and Bitcoin. So it enables them to accept the Bitcoin. It's easily tracked with some software they have. I think BTC's pay server is the best option available. It's free and it's open source. But is there anything else you could
put? BTC pay server is amazing because it's free and open source, but it's also for like diehard Bitcoiners. And the reality of the situation is most businesses have expenses they have to pay in fiat. So if you're a business and you're a Bitcoiner, accepting Bitcoin is a no-brainer. It's very easy for you to do. But if you're a business who's not a Bitcoiner, who's just maybe thinking about dipping their feet, I would suggest none come to mind right now, but there's lots of middlemen companies that basically you can accept Bitcoin and then they'll send you fiat, or you can decide the percentage of the sale you want to receive in Bitcoin and fiat. And so that lets you kind of dabble. And then all the bookkeeping and stuff is all done on their service. And that will allow you to dabble into Bitcoin while still also being able to make all your normal expenses.
Okay. So I'm a business. I'm sold on Bitcoin. I want to start using it. What's my biggest hurdle?
Probably you can either download a wallet to a cell phone and just start accepting Bitcoin right away. Type in the fiat amount into the cell phone that the person's sending you. They scan your QR code. They send you the Bitcoin. But then you have no bookkeeping done because of that. Or you can go the bookkeeping route. Again, I suggest just downloading a wallet to your phone and just getting started. Don't worry about the messiness. Don't worry about all the what ifs. Deal with the what ifs when you get there. So everyone's like, oh my God, if I earn $1 million in Bitcoin, how am I going to cash it out? Well, let's earn the $1 million first, and then let's worry about how to cash it out.
Okay, I'm kind of with you there, but still a lot of businesses, especially with the rising price of everything, it's harder for them to make ends meet. So there may be a lot more transactions they would have to do with the business, with the Bitcoin they receive, because they have to pay higher prices of all the bills that they're able to pay. So again, so I'm sold on Bitcoin. I want to use it, and I'm going to institute it the way you explained it. Will CRA look at me and look at me differently compared to another business that does the same thing but does not operate with Bitcoin?
That is a good question. In theory, don't quote me on this, not a tax lawyer, your taxes are all in Canadian dollars. And so and if you're immediately selling the Bitcoin for fiat once you get it as a business, that's like not a taxable event. So all that the business, all the government needs to know is how much you earned in fiat, and that's it.
So if I accept Bitcoin and sell it immediately, that's something that wouldn't have to be reported in respect to this is how much I bought it for, this is how much I sold it for.
Yeah, because you're only, it's like, it'd be no different than like taking a transaction in US dollars.
I was always under the impression it was always the case, regardless of how quick you make the sell. It's just as soon as you take it, it's a buy. And then once you sell it, that's a reportable event. So it, regardless of the amount, regardless of the time, that's the way I always interpreted it. I could be wrong. I'm not a tax lawyer. I have no affiliation with CRA whatsoever. I'm just interpreting the laws the way I see. But I'm looking at that, and I just look at that as an administrative headache more than anything. And not only that, it just makes me wonder, does this put me under the eyes of tax people, CRA, and make me a target? Because, you know, we've all dealt with other, you know, banks. I don't want to go there, but CRA, they're the be all and end all. If they want to have us bend over and give us an examination, we have to go through it. There's no way to fight it. So that's the way I interpret it. And I could be wrong. Maybe somebody out there could point out my mistakes, but that's just the way I interpret it. And maybe you want to add anything more to that.
Not really. I mean, everyone has to decide for themselves. Like I do the go fast and break things method, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with the choice you made as well, where you can go slower, make sure you're recording everything you think you need to be recording, just in case. In my opinion, again, if you're doing a couple hundred dollars in sales in Bitcoin in a whole year, like the CRA probably won't care about that. If you're doing $1 million in sales in a year, then maybe you have to figure out a system to start recording things, maybe before you hit the $1 million mark. But, you know, at some point when you're leveling up your volume here, you need to fix your system. And that's what we did at the store. We were on spreadsheets when we first started. And then as we were growing, we got way more automated and we were keeping track of way more things. And so, we have not been audited yet, so.
let's hope that you remain with that perfect record moving forward. Not that there's anything you have hiding, but just it's better not to be probed than be probed,
yes,
in my opinion. Thoughts on on-chain versus Lightning versus maybe even Liquid? I'd like to hear your thoughts on all three.
Ooh, Liquid I don't have any experience with, so I can't really comment on that one. Lightning is interesting because most of the people that come into our store are usually buying Bitcoin to send it somewhere else. And usually those places they're sending it don't accept Lightning, and therefore they can't take Lightning. Like maybe they're buying Bitcoin to put on a gambling website, or maybe they're buying Bitcoin to unfortunately convert it to an altcoin. Some people come in with just their QR codes on like a printed card because they have it in cold storage somewhere. And so Lightning isn't an option for them either. We haven't done as many Lightning deals as what I thought, but we do Lightning in the store. We don't do it online, but if you come in and you want to buy or sell over Lightning, we can do that. Just like when we started the store, we'll pull out a cell phone with a Lightning network wallet on it. We'll load up our Phoenix Lightning wallet. We'll show you the QR code and you'll send it to that.
You know, talk about Phoenix. I wanted to try this for quite some time. I haven't brought myself to do it. I know this has been getting a lot of press, a lot of good coverage by Bitcoiners out there. I want to hear your thoughts about it.
I think Phoenix is a great Lightning wallet. Most people recommend wallet Satoshi, but I don't like that because it's fully custodial. Phoenix is a Lightning node running on your phone. The only person you can open channels with is Phoenix, but it's a full node running on your phone. So every time you turn on the wallet, it has to boot up and connect to peers. And it doesn't support the fun wallet of Satoshi feature where you get that email or I can't remember, Bolt 12 or whatever it's called, but they're working on it. I know they're working on it.
In terms of then liquidity, having those channels balanced and funded, this is all taken care of behind the scenes, or does the user actually have to actively manage this as a Phoenix wallet user?
Good question. I know that for the first channels, when you open them, Phoenix will manage them. They'll make them balanced channels. So you'll receive Bitcoin on chain, but really that will go to Phoenix, and then Phoenix will then open a channel with your node. I can't comment though on anything beyond that, really, about the full channel management.
Does Phoenix have the ability of transferring or the exchanging of Lightning to on-chain or vice versa?
It does, but not like within the wallet. So you have to, like, if you're making an on-chain transaction, it has to happen outside of Phoenix, and then Phoenix will charge you a little bit for that because that's where their services come in.
Okay. Now, going a little bit further in this, and you've, at your store, you've dealt with Lightning wallets in the past. What is the largest transaction you've seen that worked with Lightning off the top of your head?
Peter Todd one time came by, and actually I shouldn't say the amount now, but I will anyways, but he sold $400 worth of Bitcoin to us over Lightning.
It would have been if you said some dude showed up and it did the $400. Yeah, so $400, that's actually a substantial amount for Lightning. I know of that. I remember the number, this has been a long time ago, but I think it was in the range of one plus Bitcoin was exchanged one time. It took many, many minutes for it to actually go through, but it did happen a year or two ago on Lightning. So there are limitations with that. But now going back, if you've done or you've seen a $400 transaction, and hopefully at that time it went flawlessly, it wasn't a long wait, it just worked, doesn't that show that there is an opportunity to use Lightning for day-to-day purchases? Because let's be honest, the things that people buy for the most part day-to-day, gas, groceries, stuff like that, it all falls within that $400 or less limit. I mean, I guess maybe groceries, you could top that depending on the size of the family and especially how much groceries cost these days. But we're getting to the point where you can function in totality with Lightning. And so doesn't this open a door? Instead of using on-chain, businesses could just simply load up a Phoenix wallet on their phone and operate through that?
I would love it if a majority of our customers just switched to Lightning, because Lightning is instant confirmations and very, very, very low transaction fees. And man, when those transaction fees were high, like a couple of months ago, that was brutal for us. Because we don't batch transactions. We don't delay transactions. Once you scan, like, you leave the store with Bitcoin in your wallet. So there's no waiting. So every single transaction that happens on our website or in our store is its own Bitcoin transaction. And boy, do those fees add up.
They do. And were you guys eating those fees?
We don't pass those fees on. Now, in extreme cases where fees are like $20 to $50, if you're coming in to buy a few hundred dollars, we might then ask you for an additional $5 to make it priority. But if you don't want to give us $5, then we'll just make it normal and you'll wait however long it takes to confirm.
Are you batching the transactions?
No.
Oh, wow.
If we're busy enough, like during bull markets, we will. But during bear markets, like the buys and sells are too sporadic that if we were to batch them, you'd be waiting too long to get your Bitcoin.
Okay. And so the people that tend to go to the Coin Shack, I would assume that's just mostly people like you and I just were interested in buying Bitcoin or even interested about learning about Bitcoin because they heard about it, they read about it, and you guys could provide a lot of information about, well, Bitcoin in general. Any businesses come towards you guys and looking for assistance with having, you know, they can start transacting in Bitcoin or at least maybe purchasing Bitcoin and putting it on the balance sheet?
No, sadly not.
A big thing.
We have a few corporations signed up with us that will, like, they'll sell things online for Bitcoin. Like, they're a Bitcoin-based company and then they'll sell their Bitcoin to us for Canadian dollars. Or we have like a couple of streamers that accept Bitcoin donations while they're streaming and then they'll cash those out with us. But no like local businesses or anything like that.
I have a feeling that the pressure that a lot of these businesses are under, these smaller businesses, small and medium-sized businesses, they're not really looking at Bitcoin right now as a salvation. They're just trying to keep their heads above water more than anything else, just the way everything is going on with the economy
for sure.
And the world as a whole. So.
That's one of the reasons why I always encourage people, if you're a Bitcoiner and you own a business, you should obviously be accepting Bitcoin, but even better, you should be offering a discount for anyone who pays in Bitcoin, because that encourages Bitcoin use. And then the more people that are using Bitcoin, maybe they'll go to the next store and they'll be like, oh, do you offer a discount for Bitcoin? Do you take Bitcoin? And then as that store hears Bitcoin more and more, then they'll realize, oh, there's actually a customer base that's willing to pay in Bitcoin.
Wouldn't that only work if there's a decent margin between profit margin? So if there's a razor thin margin, say you're high volume and you're just selling widgets at a very, very competitive rate, you can't really offer much of a discount because then maybe you start losing money on each unit you sell, right?
I mean, if you're a fiat-based business and you love Bitcoin, maybe it's worth it to take the hit to show people that we can accept Bitcoin.
That'd be a tough thing to swallow these days, given...
I agree. I would never pressure anyone to do that. But me personally, being the crazy Bitcoiner that I am, and I've lost money on plenty of Bitcoin trades just for the sake of the customer. if I owned a store that sold goods and it was like a fiat-based store, it was around before Bitcoin or it doesn't take Bitcoin, I would immediately start to offer a discount for Bitcoin purchases. 5, 10%, whatever it is, to get people interested in it, you know? Yeah. And then you can even set up a Bitcoin ATM in your store and charge 10% there and be like, bro, go over there, buy some Bitcoin, come back here, get the discount, you're good to go.
You're a Bitcoiner at heart. That's why we love you, man. And there's a question here from the audience. Rand Moore is asking, any possibility of a West Coast closer location with this with respect to the coin track? You guys going to be planning any expansion, if so, to the West Coast?
Probably not. We've been talking about an agent program forever. We never wanted to go the Canada Post route, personally, that Bull Bitcoin did. Not for any specific reason, not that it's bad. We just like it when people are talking to people who actually know Bitcoin. And so if we were to expand, we would expand to like a store. We'd build a whole new store and we'd want to make sure to house it with like proper Bitcoiners. And that's just not on the docket right now.
So face-to-face is absolutely massive for you guys. And in fact, in general, face-to-face has a higher percentage of conversion and just having a loyal customer in that respect. So yeah, I mean, I would imagine, I'm going to go back now a little bit. The Canadian Bitcoin Conference, you were a sponsor, I believe, weren't you? Mm-hmm. Media sponsor. So in terms of that, what sort of exposure did you get over there?
That was a really good learning experience because I've never sponsored anything like that before. And this whole process of running the Coin Shack has been like a long, long, long learning experience. I didn't know anything about marketing. I don't know anything about conferences or anything like that. So that was a really good learning experience to see what other people are doing. That's one of the reasons why we sell goods in our store now. We went to the conference and we're like, oh my God, look at all these booths that are selling goods. Why aren't we doing this in our store? If people are looking for Bitcoin goods and Bitcoiners are coming to our store, it only makes sense.
So what were the general questions or comments or queries people were sending your way when they met you and they realized, oh, you're Mark from the Coin Track? Like, what were they conveying to you in terms of information?
Usually it's just how do I get into Bitcoin? How do I start working with Bitcoin? How do I find a job in Bitcoin? Stuff like that. And like I said earlier, it's not about working with Bitcoin. It's about like incorporating Bitcoin into your world. So you have to look at your existing skill set, your existing resources. When I got into Bitcoin, I was single, I was poor, I had no dependents. So I was able to take that risk where I could pay rent late. I was able to take that risk where I could spend 100% of my money on a Bitcoin trade in hopes of flipping it for a little bit more. So I understand some people have kids, some people have responsibilities. I'm like, right now I have more responsibilities. I couldn't do that now. But it's about looking at your resources and what you have available to you and then going on that. We had someone in Northern Ontario, we shipped them some of those Zimbabwe dollars. Because their kid was doing some presentation on school about money. And they're like, this would be amazing for my kid to have. And so, again, this is someone who looked at the resources they had, the setting they're in. And they're like, this is a great opportunity to teach people and to show people.
So if anybody's looking to become a billionaire or trillionaire, Mark is the man to talk to. So let's turn back the clock. Somebody approaches you and they are you 10 years ago. They have lesser responsibilities in terms of family obligations, and maybe they're able to stretch their rent payments a week or two past due. And they really want to get a job in Bitcoin. What sort of advice would you give that person?
I would be like, what do you do now? Are you an artist? Are you a programmer? Are you an accountant? Are you like, what's your existing skill set? If you're an artist, bro, just start making art and selling it for Bitcoin. Make the art around Bitcoin. Bitcoin needs more artists. Bitcoin needs more music specifically, in my opinion. So if you're able to create anything, not program, but just create like in the physical world, do it. And then try and sell it for Bitcoin, sell it for fiat, put that discount in for Bitcoin if you want to. If you're a scuba diver, start offering scuba lessons for Bitcoin. I don't know. Just it's all about whatever you can do now. Just it's not about you leaving that to go work with Bitcoin. It's about bringing Bitcoin into that.
A lot of opportunity out there for these transactions to avoid using like Visa and MasterCard because they are expensive and the settlement takes much, much longer than, say, Lightning or even on-chain. On-chain is still, in comparison, much, much faster than Visa. And even that on-chain is deemed to be rather slow in the grand scheme of things. But you were mentioning people that are involved in creating music. How would you suggest that they go about doing this? Because right now, not too familiar, but if you are signed on with a producer or whatever, then you eventually get onto Spotify and all that, and you're able to collect royalties through that. But as an independent music producer, and you want to use Bitcoin in order to incorporate Bitcoin to start selling it, what would you suggest would be the best method to do so?
Keyword in that being independent, so you're able to make rules for yourself. I personally, the idea is off the top of my head is if you're big enough and skilled enough to make a music video, do that and throw a QR code in the corner for donations. Make a Shopify website and sell your music for Bitcoin. Make it really, really cheap so people will do it. If you're on Spotify, again, make songs about Bitcoin or about economics or about freedom, about those subjects, just to start gathering more conversation about it. You don't necessarily need to be, you know, working at an exchange or helping people buy and sell Bitcoin to work with Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's lots of opportunities out there. We just have to somehow breathe.
Like you, for example, you're doing a podcast. That's amazing, bro.
Hey, man, I'm just chatting. That's all I'm doing. I'm a dude in the basement just chatting away about Bitcoin and the stuff that we love. And just I don't want it to go back to the physical location of the coin check, but somebody's asking if multiple trips per day are a problem with the coin check. I don't know how you want to answer that with keeping everything. Maybe I'll let you decide to figure out.
I will just say it's a maximum of $1,000 per transaction and a maximum of $10,000 in a day.
What's the $10,000 limit?
That's the reporting to FinTrack. I can't go into too many details about that.
Gotcha. Okay. I wasn't aware. Actually, I think I was aware. I totally forgot about that. So yeah, no, that's interesting. And there's options to get KYC free if that's your jam and if you're in the Markham area. Yeah, so there you go. I'm not sure whatever else you want to talk about with working in Bitcoin, because there's a lot of opportunities here for artists, for producers of content, for people selling goods and services. I'm looking at even like the simple, like the side hustles, like walking dogs and stuff along those lines. I think there's a huge opportunity here to incorporate Bitcoin and to use this, not as a way to get around paying taxes or anything, report everything. This is the proper way to do it. But just to a quick and easy exchange of cash. But also by doing this, you increase the circle for the circular economy of Bitcoin, because this is something that's very important. It's not just simply buy it and hold it. There's got to be a mechanism to use it and sell it, because it is money. It's used as a medium of exchange. So we have to start doing this more often. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the dog walker is like the perfect example, because again, that's like an independent person who's most likely working for themselves. So if you have five dogs paying fiat rates, again, get five dogs paying Bitcoin rates. Give the five dogs paying Bitcoin rates a little discount, and then and maybe treat them better. Give them like a bonus or something like that. But yeah, exactly. Like that's you going face to face with someone and being like, man, I know I walk your dog, and it's great. But I take payment in Bitcoin now, and it's way easier to use than whatever online thing we're using now. And it's a great way to introduce people to it.
Here's a million sad idea for people out there. You know, right now there's Fountain, and I'm not sure if you use Fountain, the app for listening to podcasts. It's simply, as you're listening to podcasts, they stream you Satoshis as a reward for listening to podcasts. But here's an idea for people out there that are in the dog walking business. Do it in such a way, create an app so as you're walking every, you know, few hundred meters, every kilometer, sats get streamed to your wallet. So that way you're getting proof of work payment for doing a service, payment is instant, and this would be, I don't know.
That's a good idea, but that's like the idea that's way in the future. So to get started, you can't do that, because the resources needed for that, and I'm sure a dog worker can't build that app. So that you get started with that, and then as you grow the business and as you grow Bitcoin, then you can do what you did and work towards what you did, or what you said.
I'm just throwing this out there for any programmers that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
I think so. It's all verifiable on like GPS and stuff too, so people can like load it up and see the route you took, and then they for like every like kilometer or whatever it was, every 100 meters, you get paid some satoshis. It's a good idea.
There we go. Like that's a million sats idea right there, or beyond a million sats idea. But there's like not just that. I mean, there's so many more creative ideas like that, because the one thing I did hear quite a bit in the past, and eventually, it seems like power producers, now this is going into the weeds here, producers, people that generate electricity for us, eventually they're going to, I think, start mining Bitcoin and as a way of load balancing. You know, when there's times of not enough pressure, you know, there's mm-hmm. more energy generated, they're going to, instead of selling it to some other jurisdiction at a loss, they'll just mine Bitcoin and hold on to that. But then there could be an opportunity for customers to pay in Bitcoin. And if they do that, you could almost do it real time. Like, as you flip the switch now and start using electricity, we don't get the bill till a month later. Theoretically, with Bitcoin, it could be paid real time. As you're using electricity, the sats would have been streamed to the people generating the electricity. So they would get real-time money. They don't have to wait it till the end of the month, and then it could be somebody delinquent that doesn't even pay their bill, and then everybody suffers the consequences. I think there's opportunities like this out there. Very creative methods that people could create, could institute Bitcoin in existing businesses, even large businesses mm-hmm. like power generation. I'm thinking of this, and it makes me also bullish on Bitcoin. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, but that's, I'm looking at this like, man, there's so many freaking opportunities out there.
It does. Every time someone asks me, how do I work with Bitcoin? I immediately go, what do you do now? Okay. Like, and then I continue, you know, get a spreadsheet out and just start doing it for Bitcoin. Start recording it on a spreadsheet. Everyone can work a spreadsheet. You can download a spreadsheet program for free. Even you don't even need to buy one. And just get started. Just start doing it. That's the important thing.
Is there any business in particular you look at, or any service, anything that just you're saying it screams needs to use Bitcoin?
Not really. Just every like brick and mortar store. Everywhere you use, like everywhere that credit card fees are a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's like where you can offer that little bit of discount to pay with Bitcoin. Where normally stores, like I walk around, there's a bunch of Chinese restaurants around me. And they'll usually offer a cash discount because they want people to avoid credit card fees. Just do the exact same thing for Bitcoin.
But I would suggest report all your
stuff. Oh, yeah. They're doing it for taxes, but still record and report everything to the best of your ability.
Yes, exactly. You don't want to scam the government in any way, shape, or form. Make sure you pay your taxes. That's the proper way of doing things. We don't want to get shut down. Mark, is there anything else you want to bring up before we wrap up this interview? Anything that we missed? Anything you just want to bring up? You know, the floor is yours. We could even dive deep in any topic. This is your opportunity to take this into a direction you want to go.
Not really. We can talk about Lightning for a bit because that's an interesting.
Let's do it.
Lightning without Bolt 12, I think, is struggles because, for example, that Lightning transaction I was talking about with Peter, it wasn't just a simple scan the QR code. It was figure out all the math, and then I had to, in my phone, type in the exact amount of Bitcoin I was expecting from him, and then he had to scan it and send it, and I think maybe we might have had one fail there as well before it actually went through. But the whole like not being able to send an arbitrary amount of Bitcoin is like holding it back greatly, I believe.
The user interface, and I've been using Lightning for about 2 years now. I run my own Lightning node, and mm-hmm. I have been for about 2 years, and I have to admit, I'm not sugarcoating, this is the reality of it. I find with Lightning, the user experience, the user interface, it's lacking. There is something that is just missing. And, you know, if you look at the fiat world, and I'm going to use that as the be all and end all in terms of ease of use and just ease of transaction. You just get your piece of plastic, you could tap it, NFC, and it's done. It's just quick and simple. Somehow they have to incorporate what's being done in fiat and implement this in Lightning. I just find that there is just, it's too cumbersome. And even it varies by wallet to wallet, from app to app. And you get this totally different experience. And that doesn't work all that well in that regards. Once you overcome that, it works absolutely flawlessly, quick and easy and seamless payments. But it's just that first hurdle just to make it, you know, a normie, when they look at it, they say, like, I want to see how easy it is to use. If it is easy to use and as easy or easier than fiat, that's the way you could drag a lot of people into this. And that could be massive hurdle.
I think Bitcoin on-chain is just as easy to use as fiat, if not easier at this point. Again, you just scan the QR code, you type in how much you want to send, you press send, it's done. Like you said, though, Lightning, there's some hurdles. I run a Lightning node. I even get some routing fees in there as well, which is fun and exciting. But to set all that up was a huge learning curve. I read Mastering Lightning Network by Andreas Antonopoulos. I don't maintain my Lightning Network at all, but in theory, what you should be doing is adjusting all your fees on the fly constantly. You could probably turn running a Lightning node into like a full-time job if you really wanted to. But once you get it set up and once you make a Nostr account, sending zaps is like the most amazing feeling in the world. Being able to like tip content creators directly and being able to sort by the most tipped content rather than the most liked content is like a whole new way of doing social media, in my opinion.
I got to get your Nostr ID so I could put it in the show notes. I don't even think I follow you, to be perfectly honest. So I have to get that.
I've fallen off a little bit on Nostr, not going to lie, just because there's so much more excitement now on X day to day. But I think the technology behind Nostr and like the experience, again, of sending zaps to people is like it's unmatched.
100%. And you're right. If I have to try to figure out how much time I spend between Nostr and Twitter/X has a way more like percentage, like slice of the pie than does Nostr for me. Nostr has a great signal to noise ratio compared to Twitter, but there's just so much information that currently exists on Twitter and I'm not finding it flows over to Nostr. So for me, I mean, as you know, with the show, I'm always trying to get information, news stories. I get some from Nostr, but mostly from Twitter. But Nostr, it is, you can see there's potential there. Decentralized, exactly, yeah. And there's no algorithm to you know, fool anybody. And yeah, the tipping, you know, of, you know, if you say something, write a note, and there's value to that, you're going to get rewarded from that in the form of zaps.
And getting your first tip and sending your first tip and even writing your first note, it feels almost like your first Bitcoin transaction. You're like, whoa, this is different. This is something that's actually new.
Agreed. Because there's a lot of people out there that are still not even aware of what is Nostr. Mm-hmm. And even that too, compared to 6 months ago, look how the user experience has changed, has drastically improved. And I'm not sure what phone or operating system you use. I use a derivative of Android called Graphene OS. Oh, actually, I know which one you use. I don't want to say it.
It's Calyx OS.
Perfect. I didn't want to dox anything.
That's cool.
I guess you're using Amethyst as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the same boat. And I'm not sure if you noticed, but over time, every iteration, every improvement, it's noticeable. And if you compare a snapshot of what it is today, I'm talking about the app, Amethyst that gets onto Nostr. Compare what it is today to say 2-3 months ago. Man, it's a big difference, and this is quickly changing. And it's not just Amethyst; it also applies to Damis, which is
all of them. Crazy. Like the speed of development on Nostr is pretty crazy. Like I remember, I maybe got into it like 3-4 months ago. I want to say not too long ago, but like within like the first couple weeks I was there, people were like, okay, this is a streaming site that mimics Twitch. All right, this is a site that mimics Instagram. All right, this is a site that mimics Reddit. Like they were just making every service possible, and it worked on Nostr. Like you could watch someone playing video games, and you could send them tips. And the coolest thing about Nostr is that the person streaming can actually tip the viewers back, and that's not possible on Twitch.
And that's what I did explore this and I stopped it, but that's something I want to institute for the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Mm-hmm. Is when we do these live shows, I want to also have them stream to Nostr as well. That's something that's in the works for us. It may take some time to work this out, but that is something we want to do.
Imagine you did that, and then you offered trivia on your show that paid out to the Nostr listeners only. Now everyone watching your show is like, oh shit, I got to get on Nostr so I can get these rewards, you know? And now they're learning about it because they're incentivized to do so through those rewards.
And there's a lot of big players on there. Like the ones I see that post frequently are like Lynn Alden, Marty Bent, and people along those lines. They understand the value of this. And as long as you have people like this pumping up valuable information, it's going to be able to draw more and more people away from Twitter/X. Like no matter what we think of it, it is still a centralized service. You could get rug pulled at any time. If they don't like what you're saying, it could get deleted. If they don't like you as a person, your account could get deleted. This happens less so often these days under the new regime, but it's still a possibility under a centralized service. There's a huge but here. There is a problem with Nostr, and a lot of people don't really talk about it all that much, but with Twitter, theoretically, you could get hacked. And it happened today, I believe, with Strike. I'm not sure if you saw this.
But I didn't see that. Your Twitter account got hacked?
I mean, this is what's being thrown out there by Jack. So Jack's saying that his company, Strike, was sending out tweets. And he's telling people, don't follow those tweets. Don't click on the links because it's been a compromised account. But ultimately, because it's been compromised and it's a centralized service, they could approach Twitter/X and have them rectify that and give the account back to the people that should own it. With Nostr, you don't have this. You have a one-shot deal with it. If somehow your NSEC, I don't know if that's NSEC, is compromised and somebody gets it, you have no way to get it back. All your information is gone. And somebody could take over that account and do whatever they want with it. And you could do the same thing, but you can't change the NSEC. It's there. It's tied specifically for that account. So that's the one thing with Nostr. I will say that there is potential attack vector against an account. You have to be very careful.
Nostr has its own UI problems and UX problems to work out for sure. I know I haven't checked it out in a while, but there were extensions and stuff you could add. So you didn't have to type in your NSEC directly into the service you were logging into. And I think over time, and this will probably have happened to Bitcoin as well, as much as we don't want it to, is that custodial services will step in and offer people the ability to recover their funds, or in this case, their NSEC or whatever it may be. Because what you described is an issue also with Bitcoin.
Correct.
If you lose your private keys, oh my God, now my money's gone and there's no one I can go to reverse the transaction or anything.
And that's what Josu is saying in the chat. It's the same thing with Bitcoin. Don't link your keys. And exactly it. So there's similarities between the two. It's just with when you're dealing with your public key, NPUB and NSEC, it differs than your XPUB and XSEC because the reason why is with the wallets, you're very careful with it. You don't – I'll speak from experience. I hope everybody does the same thing. Don't use your everyday computer. Do not use your phone for storing your wallet address, your keys. Use something like put it offline, cold storage. Get a metal plate, stamp it like that, and if you want to use it, spin up a Tails OS, load everything up on there, and when you've done with it, shut it off, you're done. Be extra careful with your wallet. With Nostr, it's different because it's a social media site. Mm-hmm. You tend to need to have this attached to the browser that you use every day.
And with Nostr too, sort of cut you off, you have, like, I know I was just signing into every Nostr service available just to mm-hmm. try it out. And that meant putting in my private key into every Nostr service. Now, thankfully, the culture in Bitcoin is not try every Bitcoin wallet available with your cold storage seed. We kind of need that to flow over into Nostr now, where we can find a way to like test platforms and stuff without giving up our private key.
Agreed. So that's why I look at it similarities to Bitcoin, but you know what? There comes a risk with using Nostr. You got to be extremely careful with the private key because if it's lost, so is the identification, the ID that's associated with that, and somebody else could have it. And you have to start from scratch and you have to somehow try to attract all those users that followed your old account. And there could be a level of trust that would be lost in the whole process. But yeah, Mark, anything else you want to dive into?
Nostr's got blocking, so we're good there.
I think that there's also you could do some sort of blocking and share those blocking addresses with other people. I think that there's a
ability you can have like block lists and stuff and share it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's like excellent opportunities to do this. But yeah, Mark, I want to thank you for coming out. And again, last opportunity, anything else you want to dive into? Do we talk enough about Lightning? Do you want to talk a little bit more about it?
No, I'm good. I will mention one more thing about my store that I forgot to mention.
Go ahead.
That is
all yours, man.
We recently started doing this thing where we do a weekly raffle. So everyone who comes into our store and does a cash transaction, even KYC, non-KYC, doesn't matter, you automatically get entered into this raffle to win Bitcoin. It starts at $100. Every week. If it goes unclaimed, the $100 gets added to next week. We've gone 2 weeks now without it getting claimed. So this week's prize is $300. So you can come into our store, buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. It will cost you $6 and you'll be entered into a raffle to win $300 worth of Bitcoin.
And how do they get it? Is it going to be in a SaaS card or they have to give you an address in which you send it to?
They have to give us an email address just so we can contact them if they win.
And so ultimately, will it be sent through like on-chain or Lightning or any choice?
So okay. The winner gets emailed at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. and they have till Tuesday at 8 a.m. to answer with Bitcoin address. If they don't answer, then they lose the reward and it gets added to this week's.
How long has this been going on for?
We've been doing this for, this is something that came out of the conference as well. So we've been doing this for only like a month or two now.
So is this the longest you've gone without having a claim prize?
Yeah. So I can't believe that we've gone 2 weeks now without the people emailing us back. People just either don't like to check their emails or they like to give us bad emails for whatever reason. Even if we tell them what we're doing with it. Yeah.
Spin up a new email, use Proton, do it like that, and check that periodically. That, I mean, just my two cents. I could be wrong in this approach, but people, if you're in the Markham area or within driving distance, check it out. You could win $300 of Bitcoin this coming Monday as long as you go ahead and do a transaction of $100.
Every day you come in, you get entered. So if you come 2 days during that week, you get two entries. If you come all 7 days, you get seven entries.
That's incredible. So yeah, there's opportunities out there, and maybe, who knows, it could be $400 by the week after that. That's a good way to draw in people in it. And if you're in the area, check it out. Again, location of the store, what is the nearest intersection?
The location is 238 Copper Creek Drive. We're by 9th Line and Highway 7. East End.
Are you near Pacific Mall?
No. Pacific Mall is Steeles and Kennedy. That's way more central.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah, different end of the world because I'm in the West GTA.
Yeah, you're on the West End.
You're
on the West End. I'm on the East End.
Yeah, so we're in different worlds, but the same continent. Anyways, Mark, appreciate you coming in. I'm going to hand the baton over to you. Where could people reach you? I mean, you have the floor is yours. Talk about whatever you want before we sign off.
Sure. So you can follow the company, the Coin Shack, at CoinShackCA. And you can follow me at L What's His Face, not M What's His Face because it was taken, unfortunately, but L What's His Face. And I just post whatever I kind of feel like posting on Twitter.
Some of it is very educational, and some of it shit posting. You had a couple.
Yeah, like the other day I posted support black market owned businesses, and that got pretty good.
You got a little bit of everything. Check it out. So, Mark, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about CoinShack and, of course, working with Bitcoin. And for everybody that's watching and listening in, thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back on Monday. This Monday, though, is going to be special because Joey's not going to be here. He's moving, and as a result, he's not going to be able to attend, and I will have a different co-host, Boomer. Everybody, I hope, is aware of who he is. He's been around this show for quite some time. In fact, he's been on our show briefly. I think there's one episode that he came on and talked about. I forget what it was. But anyways, Monday, check us out, 7 p.m., myself and Boomer. And until then, have fun, take care, PV, and don't be a cuck.
Take care. Thanks a lot.